Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. Our guest this morning is Quinnipiac University Professor of Social Work, Emily McCabe. We're happy to have her on to talk about what is a very serious issue. We did a show on this not too long ago, and I'm glad that we're able to continue the conversation this morning again on National Suicide Prevention Month. Definitely something that deserves a lot of attention and some information that Professor McCabe is going to be sharing with us. Good morning, Professor. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm happy to have you on. You know, I think that we should just begin with this overview, if we will, on the problem of suicide, how it looks not just in Connecticut, but also across the country. Do you have any information, any statistics on that you could share?
Yeah. And so, you know, nationally, we have data basically from kind of 2022 is our most recent data. Nationally, we saw just around 49,000 people died by suicide. So it is a large number. And what we know is that it increased around 35%, which is a pretty large number, from 2000 to 2018 to about 14%. It peaked at 2018, and then it actually went down a little bit for some groups, particularly white women and white men in 2020. But now we've seen that it's actually risen back again to the 2018 levels in 2022. So it's it's an area of concern for actually all age groups nationwide and here as well in Connecticut. And so while we had, for example, that 49,000 people die by suicide, a lot more folks actually had suicidal thoughts nationwide. Research estimates that's around over 13 million people considered suicide seriously. And around just almost 4 million people actually had a plan to die by suicide, and 1.6 actually attempted suicide. And so it's definitely something that we need to be on the lookout for, starting kind of in the younger ages, 10 and older, and then throughout the lifespan. And we know that, you know, in Connecticut, we also see, you know, a high number of suicides as well. So we saw that from 2017 to 2021, there were just over 2,000 deaths from suicide. And what's really important to know is that many of these deaths are preventable. And I think that's a message that's really important for us to know, particularly because firearms are actually used in just over half of all suicides. And so thinking about, you know, access to firearms and guns and so forth and background checks is definitely an important topic for us to consider.
Definitely some serious information there and a strong way to begin our program. And that's why I wanted to start with these statistics to prove that, yes, this is in fact a problem. And the other thing that I want to establish early on in our conversation here, Professor McCabe from Quinnipiac University and the Social Work Department, is your background with this issue, because I want people in the audience to know that you are a trusted voice on this. You're not just somebody doing research. You've actually had your heart and your mind close to this issue for some time, haven't you?
Yeah, so this is a very personal topic for me. I became a social worker because I personally experienced loss related to suicide. So my mom, Cheryl, died by suicide when I was 3 years old. And it was something, you know, I think we've seen a lot of progress. Back then, it was even more stigmatized, and so people didn't talk about it. I felt certainly very alone as a child. It wasn't something that I really ever got help for, and certainly caused some challenges emotionally, you know, in my younger years and then growing up into my early kind of young adulthood. And so it's something that I felt very passionate about, knowing that this really was preventable. She died through use of a firearm where, you know, she was able to get it very easily without a background check, you know, and if someone maybe had seen the warning signs or known the warning signs, perhaps it could have been prevented. I've been involved with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I was the board president, and I also coordinated for 3 years the Out of the Darkness Walk in Hamden. And, you know, so really involved in education. I'm a certified mental health first aid trainer. So suicide prevention is something that is near and dear to my heart. I know that we can save lives when we, you know, engage in widespread public education about what the warning signs are and when we actively work to reduce stigma. because no one should feel ashamed to admit that they are having thoughts of suicide. And we certainly shouldn't shame anyone from, you know, who might be experiencing those thoughts or who have attempted and who are coming out of the hospital. I always like to give the example of, you know, when someone comes out of the hospital after receiving chemotherapy or surgery due to cancer, we're all ready with our casseroles and figuring out how do we help with school pickup. But when someone comes out of the hospital after a recent suicide attempt, we don't see that same kind of response. They're often suffering in silence. And so it's something that I'm going to continue to advocate for. And I really do feel like the work that we're doing in our community through AFSP, as well as Mental Health First Aid, is really making a difference.
I'm glad, Professor McCabe, how you brought up the issue of talking about suicide, first and foremost. The issue itself in general, and also people who maybe they're survivors or they lost a loved one, such as yourself, mm-hmm. to somebody suffering from suicide. This is something that people are encouraged to talk about now in 2024. And yes, there's still some mm-hmm. work to be done on that front. But maybe 30, 40 years ago or further back, this was something that you were encouraged not to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we didn't talk about it as a family. We certainly, you know, it wasn't brought up in school. Honestly, I think the first person outside of my immediate family that I think that I actually had an open conversation with about suicide when I was in my, you know, middle kind of 20s, which says something. And so I think that we have made a lot of progress. I think there's a lot of movement, particularly in younger generations, to be able to be open. But I think they still oftentimes get the message. I think particularly boys, for example, in some communities get a message that it's not okay to, you know, be emotional, to feel these thoughts or have these thoughts, and to actually seek help. And so I still think we actually need to do a lot of work, not only encouraging people to talk about, you know, when they're not okay, because we definitely have we just want people to feel, to say that they're okay, and we kind of present that image on social media. And when we're with our peers, you know, and extended family, but I think that we want to send the message that it's okay to not be okay. We all have a lot of pressures going on. Certainly youth have more pressures than they ever have in the past. And so I think we have to kind of send the message that it's okay to reach out and ask for help. And it's also okay, you know, for us to say, hey, are you doing okay? This is what I've noticed. I'm a little bit worried about you. And I think we need to be able to know what those warning signs are, because I firmly believe, and the research shows, that suicide is preventable. A lot of folks, I do a lot of work with survivors through the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and I often hear that folks are, you know, it's the what ifs, and if I had only known, if I had only seen. But the reality is most of us haven't been educated in what the warning signs are. And so, you know, we can't blame ourselves if we didn't know what we should be looking for. And it's also hard to really imagine that someone that we care about or love would actually feel that need to go to that extent. But there's a lot of, you know, kind of research showing that if we engage and we ask the questions directly, that people will feel relief and they will open up and tell us when they're experiencing these thoughts.
Let's go over some of those warning signs. Can we do that, Professor?
Absolutely. And so some of the things, you know, the kind of perhaps the most obvious is that someone talking or writing about death or dying or suicide. And so that might mean, you know, particularly for youth, it might be more like on social media, making, you know, kind of a post about it or a video. It might be, you know, someone making an offhand comment. And sometimes those statements are, you know, very specific, like I want to die. But then a lot of times they're actually a lot more kind of passive, where they might say something like, you know, I don't think you're going to have to worry about me anymore, or maybe I'd be better off if I wasn't here. And so we want to take any of those statements really seriously and just ask with a really caring, compassionate kind of attitude around, you know, tell me more about that. I'm worried about you. It sounds like things have been really hard lately. Let's talk about it. If they're obviously threatening to hurt themselves or kill themselves, if they're looking for ways to end their life, so we call that kind of seeking access to means. Again, most suicides are done through firearms. So seeking a way to get an access to a firearm. They might be looking up ways on the internet related to, you know, medication, bridges to drive to, that sort of thing. If they're showing kind of increased agitation or anxiety, if we start to see changes kind of in their mood, or if they're sleeping too much or not enough, if they kind of describe that they don't really have a kind of a purpose in life, or they feel trapped or like there's no way out, we often look for things of like hopelessness and helplessness, that there's really no way out of the situation and they feel like it's never going to get better. So those are things that we typically look for. And really the people who, you know, are their friends and their families and their colleagues, you know how folks are. And so if you start to see a change in appearance or behavior or mood, something that's really unlike them, that's something that says, hey, maybe I should try to have a conversation with this person. It really just takes one person to reach out and say, hey, I've noticed, you know, you haven't been coming to work lately, or I noticed you haven't, you know, come to your kid's soccer game recently. Like, what's going on? And just start a conversation with them, because that makes such a difference. It's when we kind of pretend that we don't see it, or we think, oh, that person will be mad at me if I bring it up, or, you know, it's none of my business. I really think we need to kind of take kind of a bystander approach, where we all feel like, just like if someone was, you know, choking in a restaurant, we wouldn't say, well, that's not my problem, right? If we see someone who seems pretty visibly distressed or maybe in some kind of emotional distress, I do think it's all of our responsibilities to go and try to assist. And we have great programs out there to help train people. Just like we take physical first aid courses, that's why I teach mental health first aid, to help just everyday folks who aren't necessarily trained as a, you know, a counselor or a psychologist, to be able to recognize those warning signs, but also then what to do in that circumstance. How do you effectively intervene and help connect that person to professional support?
I'm Morgan Cunningham. It's Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and also 96.5 TIC. Our guest is Quinnipiac University social work professor Emily McCabe, and we're talking about the issue of suicide as it is September, National Suicide Prevention Month. We just spent a few minutes going over some of the symptoms or warning signs that somebody might be showing if they're considering suicide, and some steps that you can take to perhaps bring up the conversation with them and see what's going on. I also want to mention that there are programs that can help as well. I think we've hinted to that a little bit, Professor. Could you go over some options for people who may want to consider getting that help that they may need? If they're starting to think this way and they know that something's off, where can they turn?
Absolutely. We have a lot of great resources here in Connecticut, and really even nationwide. So thankfully, one of the best things that happened in recent time is that we now have a shortened national hotline number. So it used to be lengthy and people had a hard time remembering it. Now you may have heard it's 988. So that is the national 24-hour hotline or kind of crisis line. Anyone can call it. You can call it for yourself. You can also call it on behalf of someone that you're worried about if you're with them and they feel nervous to call the line. You can call them or you can also text them. So it's 24 hours, 365 days out of the year. We also in Connecticut have 211, which is our information and referral line. But if you press 1, that's going to connect you to either youth or adult mobile crisis. And so someone can either potentially talk to you over the phone or they can come out to where you are if you are someone who is considering suicide and you feel like you need that immediate support. We also have, I'd say this for the younger folks who maybe don't want to call someone, but there's another text line in addition to 988, which is 741-741. And then if you're someone who maybe isn't kind of in immediate crisis, but you do think, hey, maybe things have been a little bit harder than usual, I've started to notice I'm having some darker thoughts, I'm just not myself, we really encourage you to consider reaching out maybe first to your primary care doctor. Sometimes that's a little easier than initially going right to a therapist. Or if you do want to find a counselor, a couple of ways to do it is you could go to psychologytoday.com. That's all one word, psychologytoday.com. And you can easily put in your zip code, your insurance, kind of who you might want to work with in terms of gender, what your challenge might be, and you can easily find someone who is accepting patients currently, whether that's in-person or telehealth. You can also go on to your health insurance website, and you can particularly find someone who is accepting patients in your nearby area. If you feel like you're not yet ready to talk to a professional, I encourage you to talk out, you know, with a friend or family member, someone who you trust, who has been helpful for you in the past, and also just think about what are the kinds of things that you have done in the past that have been helpful for you. We call those kind of informal supports when things have gotten hard. And in general, we just avoid kind of or recommend avoid using substances, because substances are also linked to kind of increased, you know, challenges, mental health challenges, and also increased suicides as well, just because it increases your impulsivity, it reduces your inhibition, and it makes it hard to think clearly.
Is there any connection, Professor, between, say, social media and the internet and devices that we have and people who are going through suicidal ideation? You know, I've read some studies that certainly it can cause a toxic relationship, perhaps among youth, for instance. Mm-hmm. Is there any data to suggest that maybe there's a problem there and people should be considering relying on their devices a little less?
I mean, I think that we have data out there that shows that kind of excessive social media use can decrease mental wellness. It can increase anxiety. It can increase kind of those sometimes, you know, mood symptoms and so forth. I do think also, not necessarily related to data, but stuff that I've seen in my own clinical work, is that there are, you know, vulnerable youth or adults even who are able to access through social media or different platforms online that actually, you know, show people engaging in self-harm or suicidal behavior or kind of talk through methods. And that's certainly something for someone who is vulnerable or at risk of suicide, that could be an increased kind of risk factor. But on the other hand, we also have positives related to people, you know, seeing someone on social media post something, and there's mechanisms to be able to report that concern easily. And also people can, you know, through the internet also access things like support groups. You know, if they didn't want to come in person, there is more kind of online support that's available as well. So I think it's kind of a two-sided coin. It's really about kind of healthy, responsible use of social media and recognizing when maybe it's actually causing increased stress and distress.
That's a genius point. Quinnipiac University professor Emily McCabe is my guest this week on Face Connecticut. We are talking about September, which is Suicide Prevention Month. And yes, this is September, and yes, that's what this Awareness Month is all about. But we should really stress that this is not a one-month-out-of-the-year issue. It's a daily, year-round issue, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Suicide happens every month of the year, and so it's something that we should talk about. Obviously, going into the winter months, you know, sometimes we can see increased rates of depression and so forth. You know, it's getting darker. People maybe are a little bit more isolated, and so we should be thinking about it all the time and really kind of, you know, taking those steps to be able to be a person who can start that conversation, enrolling in a mental health first aid class, you know, which oftentimes organizations in Connecticut are offering for free. We have both adult and youth curriculum. So if you're someone who works with kids or have, you know, someone in your life who you love about, whether they're a youth or an adult, you can certainly take a training, get certified, and feel like you hopefully have the skills to be able to recognize this no matter what month it is. We also have events throughout the year through AFSP. There's the Hamden Out of the Darkness Walk, which is happening in early October, on October 6th, and there's walks happening throughout the entire state in the fall, and so I encourage folks to check out AFSP.org. Also, just know that, you know, that there is a community out there for those who may be struggling with the loss of a survivor or as a survivor. And so we have what's called Healing Conversations Program, which is a free peer-to-peer support program that's offered all throughout the year for someone who may be experiencing, you know, the loss and grief of having lost someone to suicide. And that, again, can be accessed through AFSP.org. So I think we have to keep up the conversation all year, even though it's great that we have this targeted month to talk about it. But, you know, deaths are happening throughout the year, so we want to keep that attention there.
When should people, students, I mean, when should they start learning about the issue of suicide?
That's a hard question. I think that it really depends on their kind of level of maturity and, you know, understanding of death, as well as, you know, mental illness and emotional challenges vary, obviously, by age. But I think that we should be starting to talk about kind of mental wellness as early as possible and kind of that social connection, so that people aren't, you know, even as kids, aren't feeling socially isolated. But I think maybe kind of those conversations, we actually have a whole separate line of or curriculum for teenagers for mental health first aid. So it's actually teens kind of teaching other teens. So I think adolescents is definitely a great age for students to be talking about it, learning about kind of what the risk factors are, because oftentimes they're the ones that are seeing these things happen with their friends. They're seeing some of these kind of, you know, warning signs with their peers, and they might be like, you know, reaching out to a parent or reaching out to a teacher saying, hey, I'm worried about my friend. They wrote this on their social media. They told me this, over, you know, they texted me this thing that makes me a little bit worried. And it's not to say we don't need to worry about kids who are, you know, pre-adolescent and so forth, but I think, you know, those early, you know, teenage years, 14 and older, I think is a great time for us to be in the schools and really educating kids about what the warning signs are and what does mental health look like, and how do we promote mental wellness.
What about adults, too, right? Are there any programs that are specifically geared toward adult education on the issue?
Yeah, so Mental Health First Aid has three curriculums. One is targeted towards adults. That's the one that I teach. And so it's really about learning about the most common kind of mental health challenges that adults face. What are the symptoms? So whether it's depression or anxiety or trauma, psychosis, and looking at how do we actually intervene, whether it's a crisis or not a crisis, and really helping people understand kind of how do we help capitalize on kind of informal supports, but how do we also know when maybe it's time to recommend someone get connected to professional help. And then Mental Health First Aid also has the youth curriculum as well. So I think that's one of, there's lots of different curriculums out there, trainings for folks, but I think that's one that, you know, I've been doing since 2015. I really believe in it. I think I've had folks email me after the training and say, I use this. I really think it made a difference. I truly believe that it changes lives and it can save a life.
How much more education is it going to take, right? Because this is obviously something that is not a new problem, but has been discussed a lot more in recent years. But, you know, there's definitely more work that needs to be done until we get to zero, ultimately.
Yeah, and that's definitely the goal, right? Zero suicide. And I think it is achievable, but one, I think we need still continued cultural change around being able to reduce or eliminate the stigma associated with mental illness, associated with suicide, so that we can talk about it openly and that people feel comfortable seeking help. I also think there needs to be more funding for research around suicide. It's a complex issue that sometimes, unfortunately, the media portrays as a very simplistic kind of, you know, phenomena that, oh, someone breaks up with someone and they die by suicide. It's very complicated, so we need a lot more funding to support research to help identify what are the, you know, complexity or the complex factors involved to be able to identify who's most at risk in the next 24 hours. For example. And so there's a lot more that needs to happen. And I do think we need a lot more primary prevention. So, for example, I think all teachers throughout the country should be trained in something like Mental Health First Aid to be able to recognize the warning signs, particularly with the youth that they're working with. I think all corporations or businesses or organizations should be, you know, having staff in-service trainings where everyone can get trained in something like Mental Health First Aid so that it really becomes a public health approach. And so we still have a long ways to go. I think we're making progress, but the rates are high enough that we know, hey, people still aren't necessarily either reaching out for help. They're not being identified early on, you know, because the majority of people do actually show some kinds of warning signs. And so it's something that we just need to continue to educate people about. And we need to have enough people who care about the issue. It can't just be folks like me who are personally impacted. We have to prioritize this as a public health issue nationwide.
Quinnipiac University social work professor Emily McCabe is her name, and I really appreciate her time coming on Face Connecticut with me, Morgan Cunningham, on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5, WRCH, and also 96.5 TIC. Professor, before we get out of here, could you just run through some more important contact information again for people to know as we wrap up the show?
As far as getting support, absolutely.
Yes.
Just make sure that you have in your phone 211 in Connecticut, and you would press 1. That will give you mobile crisis for adults and for youth, 988, which is a talk or text line, 24 hours a day. 741-741 is another text line. And just to note that, you know, psychologytoday.com is a great resource, as well as your insurance company on your website, wherever you go to find providers. Is a great way to get resources as well if you're looking for a counselor.
Professor McCabe, thank you for coming on Face Connecticut. I appreciate it, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.